Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello everyone and welcome to today's show. I've been flicking through Kieran's contact list and I've landed on a player who comes under the category of wing wizard, Dutch master, and they scored against Norwich. A big welcome to the show, Super Bobby Petter.
Good evening, thank you for having me.
It's a brilliant, so pleased that you're on the show. I've heard rumours, Bobby, that Kieran might join us on the way. He's travelling up north, so we'll have to see whether he joins us tonight.
You know what it's like. Fetch me later.
And let's see if he drops in. The purpose of the show is always to talk about the player's career with Ipswich, and we talk about, you know, some of the highs and the lows, and give you an opportunity to put across what happened to you, you know, because we're only fans that sit in the stand. But before we get to that, just sort of catching up with where you are now. I understand, obviously, from some of the chats I've had with Kieran that you're doing a bit of coaching, and I'm also interested in whether the DJ career is still going on.
Oh man, so where do you start? Yeah, no, I've been, and I'm back. I came back to the UK in 2000. Really officially back to Glasgow in 2010 in April. I finished my time in England when I was living in Newcastle, funny enough. I was playing for Darlington. And obviously, Kieran was playing for Newcastle. And the Newcastle was buzzing. You know, it was a great city to play at. For him, of course, and obviously it's a football city. But good life as well. Just good time, but I finished my career. In 2006, I went to Australia to join the A-League there and was just started in the second season. So I had to come back to, afterwards, 2010, I had to go back to Newcastle, sort everything out, because I had a lot of stuff in storage for 4 years. So one of the guys says to me, "Book, I've never been to an old firm." And that time I do call it old firm. Things have changed a bit, but you know that. Glasgow Derby now, as you know. But he said, "I've never been." So I said, "I'll take you." So we went, and I didn't know what kind of reception I would get. And it was bad winds at the time. I'm woody up and was cozy. I'd be inconspicuous. As soon as they see me, I was like, instantly, "That's Bobby Petter." And it was a really good welcome that I got. And that for me, it was decided back to the kind of, because I knew I had to leave Australia, but to go back to Glasgow and settle there. Holland was never the question, never in question, because never an option, because I left there since 96. And I really enjoyed my time in the UK. But where? South of the border or north of the border? And that was me that I infected to come back to Glasgow. And since then, I did my one-to-one football coaching, one-to-one personal trainer, which I've done in Australia, brought back. Good intentions, it's just that I realized, hey, the weather is not so good. People here, the way that their lifestyle, well, it would only mean Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. Monday is Monday Blues. So Tuesday is a recovered. Wednesday I do something. Thursday I do something. Friday after work stuff. So you kind of limited. This is all after a certain period of time. I realized I need to change a few things here and there. So that was kind of like I go back to my roots, and I always liked sports. So for me, it was not just football; it was tennis, and I like watching all kinds of sports. So, I mean, American football is on the weekend, Super Bowl, so I like to follow that as well. But yeah, you come back here, and it's just like goldfish bowl, huh? Everybody recognizes you, but great times here at Celtic, but people also, and I will never forget, and that's why I'm quite glad that you asked to go in the podcast here, is to talk about my time in Ipswich, because that was really the moment where I resurrected my career after leaving Holland and joining Ipswich. And that was, I was very happy. I mean, I was, so my final year was final, right? I was already going to be the last year, and I wasn't really with the first team, which they said I was going to be at. So they put me in the second team, different manager. And then also you get told, you can't do this. So it was kind of like, well, hold on a minute. What's going on? So I struggled to deal with that. Lost my way a little bit, my focus in football, until I had a meeting. And I said, Bobby, really, what do you want to do? Because we hate to see a really talented player to go to waste. And the meeting I had was with John Maxwell. John Maxwell was obviously former Real Madrid, not only fourth player. I mean, I worked with Fire in the first team at 16. He was my former captain, and as now my manager. And I knew I was having a wee battle with myself and other things outside of football. And I lost focus. But that particular meeting and that question, that made me realize, Jesus, he's right, what I want to do. I'll probably be a bin man or something, because I really thought about what I was going to do, but I did put me a bit more on pressure. Yeah, what am I going to do? So basically, I tried to focus. And then somebody, which Dutch guy, I can't remember his name, was connected with Romeo Sondervan, said, Bobby Ipswich Town is looking for a player. I'm like, okay. Out of the blue, right? Yeah. Scoot the punch. But I said, right, okay, so I've got a friendly game with Feyenoord, the reserves, against Volendam. So my agent at the time was there as well. And I played a terrible game. He says, Bobby, that was terrible. That was rubbish. I says, Bobby, if they take you on after that performance, man, you've got an angel looking out for you, right? And I'm all, and then a couple of days later, I said, Bobby, they still want you. And I'm like, brilliant. Because that was really an escape. So I was happy to come, obviously, to come and join Ipswich. It was obviously very new. But I've been in England a few times and with the Dutch national youth teams, played at Wembley, original Wembley. And I was kind of liked, I don't know, the way it was in England and in the UK, we're in Scotland as well. I just had something totally different than in Holland. And I mean, that couldn't be a better time to restart and resurrect my career. And yeah, as you said, my first year wasn't really that great for various reasons, which was of personal problems. I was in a relationship that didn't work well. That played on my head. So I lost focus. And yeah, I mean, then you try to kind of adapt yourself in with the team. There's characters. Yeah, Steve Sesley. Oh, man. Steve Sesley took the mickey out of me from day one, right? From day one. And I'll tell you a story with Steve, right? Steve was obviously a character. I think he's played for Spurs as well. Good character. But look, I had to get used to that banter. And this is different than in Holland. In Holland, you don't make jokes about somebody's mom, family, Mitch's, whatever. You don't do that. But here, they do, right? And they took the mickey out of me all the time until we're in the bus, and I'll fall asleep. And the first thing you can do, right, with the boys is fall asleep. Open up my eyes, and he had his freaking pants pulled down and farted in my face, right? The only thing I could see, right, was his ring piece go poop out to go. And I was like, I am gonna go flip, right? Everybody's laughing. And I just took it on the chin, right?
Literally.
And I was struggling. But the reason they did it, because they knew I was struggling a bit. They still knew I was a little bit uptight. They knew I was capable of doing things with the ball. There was no doubt about that. Just they want to see a lot more from me. And it's not until towards the end of that year, no, actually the start of the following year, right? Then someone made a comment and it says, by 10 o'clock, you had to be there, right? And I just come in just before 10, right? I said, oh, there he is. And I says, aye. And then I was angry, right? I says, yeah. I just waited until you left. I went inside. I done your missus. And then that's why I'm in just the nick of time, came back. And didn't expect it from me, right? But everybody stopped. And I started applauding, right? And then I start laughing. I go, bastards, I says, it took me a whole freaking year. And says, welcome to the club. It's just that, well, that was the easiest was to go with the bands to be accepted. So I knew that when you come somewhere, whether it's in Holland or anywhere else, especially abroad, you have to adapt to how things work there. They're not going to change things to suit you. You know, it doesn't work this way. So I had a lot of experiences and learning curves there, and lessons that I learned from all the players, and I think hindsight, and it put me in good stead to follow up, because banter, you gotta be sharp, you gotta be quick, you know what it's like. If you come in with something dodgy, they take the Mickey, yeah, it's clothing wear or whatever. We had Danny Sonner
was gonna mention him, yeah.
Danny Sonner's sitting next to me, man. You look at it, I'm looking at it, I'm going like, dude. You better put that away whenever he was showing. I said, dude, you need to give that a wash. And we used to put, right, we got those ceilings, and you can push it up and you could put stuff there. And so he took his boxers and took it out and he put it at the top. We just hid it from him, right? But he just looked like he never had a wash, man. Good player, but he looked like he never had a wash. There's weird things. He kind of fancied himself, right? But he was
I think you both signed around the same time, and there was the first league or the first home match that season on the front cover of the program, and I've got it somewhere, but I haven't got it to hand. But there's a picture of the two of you on there. You're looking really smart.
Yes.
Socks pulled up. He's standing next to you. Socks around his ankles.
Yes, that was him, right? I remember that this guy. I don't know, but if he had to move, he could move in that 5 minutes. Is that a wee bag? We would go to Marbella, end of season, right? Everybody has kind of like a decent sized suitcase or bag with them just for their stuff. He was coming, right, with a small bag, it was like this big blue one. And it wasn't even like it was filled up. So, you know, it wasn't like that. It was like half full, half empty, whatever you want to call it. And I'm like, this guy would get somewhere, he would just go straight to the bar, and he would not freaking move from the bar. And he would be in that same clothes freaking for the rest of the few days, right, that we were there. He is some character. And Danny Sonner, what a player, what a guy he was.
Apparently he's in America now as some sort of coach over there, but Chicago's nightclub soon closed after he left Ipswich. So,
oh my god, listen, I don't know. I listened to his chat, right? I'm like, dude, are you able to pick girls up with those kind of like lines, right? Like, does that work? I did. So, no, I realized, see, Bobby, you gotta be kind of like cheeky and funny. And he looked funny, but nobody can take him serious. But you know, but it didn't have the looks and stuff, but I just get it. It wasn't, that would be embarrassing to say. I can't remember what he says, but. It's like, geez, man. But straight to the point, but, and he was there. And I remember we go to Chicago a lot. And he would stand, then he was standing, he would play with his feet, mullet, right? This. And he would stand. And what we did was we had a condom. We took it out of the wrapper and we put it over the shoulder. And Chicago was one of the places to go. And he always thought that people are looking at him, right? He should fancy himself. The people looking at me even more. It was funny. And he didn't even realize that we were bursting out of love. He didn't realize he had a freaking condom hanging over his shoulder. But that was the thing with Danny. But they're not quite good to hear that he's doing something abroad and
trying to get him on the show.
I think you should, because I'm sure that he has some stories to tell. Because there's plenty. I mean, you will name some people that go, I won't remember this, I won't remember that. But what a team we had. So even Marshy, who obviously was just on the way out. But I did a bit of homework with the strikers or with the players that were there. And I think it was, at a time, a transition of a new generation coming through of players. Gus, I stayed with him for three months. Really nice guy. I know him, obviously, from Ajax time when he was playing for them. Right back, super fast. He took me in. He helped me adapt to the life in Ipswich. Made a lot of good friends. We're still friends with. And he also played a part in my career, of course. And when it comes to obviously something that nice out, yeah, there are a big group of West Indies community there. So the music, just to skip through the DJ and the music. So I have found it very interesting, the music that was out. And Kieran, obviously, there were all the young people all in it. And I was like, that's so good. And that's when I started the DJing. And I'll go to Bedford, go to Ilford. I go to these places to buy records. And it was another a former player, I can't remember his name, but it took me wasn't with Ipswich, but took me on a swing. And he said, after a while, we'll go to certain places. They don't, I can say it now, but they were all smoking weed, right? They were relaxing there. I'm like, I'm not touching anything. I'm just focusing on what's happening. And then all of a sudden, I think he just mixed that one, and all those final records. And I was like, I think he did. And I got better and better. And then so he said, well, I think you are. I think you could go and into a bar and know somebody in Cambridge. And I said, look, listen, I am not too sure about that. So this is just a hobby. It's my outlet. I love it. But in order to go and do something, so now I want to focus with football. But that experience with vinyl records, then going to Glasgow where I took my dad and all my records with me, the scene wasn't there. So it fell away. It's not until 7 years ago that somebody actually asked me why did you go back into it? So that's kind of like a bit jump. I'm jumping a bit, but we get to...
You fit in completely well with the podcast. It's the way that we like to do it, Bobby. Just want to go back a little bit, you know, and you talked about the struggles that you had in your first season. And when you joined, there was real optimism. I particularly remember John Walk's testimonial, how you played in that game. And we were suddenly like... Yeah. You know, we've got this great Dutch player. And one thing I want to ask you about actually before we get to that, when you talked about signing for Ipswich, what was the view of a Dutch player about Ipswich Town? Obviously, you know, we had a strong link with, you know, Arnold Muren and Frans Tyson and stuff. Was it still around in Holland at that time?
Yeah, no, so it was, because if you ask people, right, if you start, obviously you do a bit of research, Rome with Sonovan give you a bit of feedback. And you realize, yeah, Frans Thijssen was there, and Müller was there, and there were, oh, Frans Thijssen, you couldn't get a ball of him. Bobby Robson, of course, Bob Robson. And then a few other, obviously, players that were obviously one of them. Teddy Butcher, obviously, was Rangers and stuff. So, and Morgan being Celtic. So if I look back now, there's a lot of hints there, especially with Ipswich Town wearing Green King as their sponsor, right? With the beer, Green King, you go to Celtic Green King. I mean, I look back at it, I'm going, it was written a little bit, you know what I mean? And if I look back at it, I had my struggles, but was that game against Norwich? That was a very important moment for myself. And I think that was maybe that I got a little more accepted.
Yeah.
I was able to show Ipswich Town supporters what I was capable of doing, but and even that going then jump to Glasgow, the Celtic, my first Old Firm game against Rangers, you know, we win 6-2 and you play a good game and people still talking about it. So there's certain things that have in common. But to go back to Ipswich, it was for me a footballing site, really a football site. The pitch looked phenomenal. The groundsman, I don't know, it's a Ferguson, I think the name.
Yeah.
Scottish guy, he's a Rangers supporter, right? But here's, I would say, what you guys do with the pitch, it was one of the best pitches in the league because we played football. And I think I was fortunate that from the 24 teams in that league, I was able to join a club that plays football, because the majority of the teams, it wasn't really like that. When I first seen some of these, obviously I wasn't really a regular at the first year. So I watched, like for example, Chris Swilzy. Swilzy was there. And Swilzy would, as a defender, ball go over the top. And I thought, look at the coach, let's play back to the goalkeeper. Let's keep possession, go to the other side. You would kick it out for a throw-in. And the fans were clapping. And I go, yeah, but that's a throw-in for them in our final third. So how is that a good thing? Because that's pressure, but if you let it run, you could just open up. So I think me coming to terms with the way I've seen football, the way it was done in the UK, this was, that was, I have to get used to that. That was a bit like, that's like now they're looking for a footballing option, which back in the day it wasn't. It was a transition in terms of new generation coming through, but the type of football. Because I think that time, with the Bosman ruling coming in a couple years later, the influences of foreigners coming through, players as well as managers, changed the way the game was played. It's being played now in the UK. And I always thought that after that first year, I realized that football-wise, okay, but fitness-wise, there was so much more passion and power, and they're fitter. That if they can combine the football skills, but also the tactics, they'll be forced to reckon with, because it's a mixture of everything. You can see it now in the Premier League and even now Championship, where it took a long time, but you see the transition where, and it's really nice to see. But I'm glad my time there, and great players, the preseason, as I said before, was challenging for me. Just to go back to my first year doing the tail test, with a bleed test, and that wasn't really good. Then we had a 12-minute run, as I said, Kieran did 12 runs. We were all supposed to do 10. So Kieran and New Mitchell did 12 off the mark, bam, 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 non-stop. And I go, the hell? Then it was my turn. And then I only managed 8.5 laps. How embarrassing that was. But that was in the preseason. Then play against Arsenal. Obviously, John Walk, who doesn't know John Walk, right? Escape to victory. Liverpool, obviously Ipswich, Scotland. I mean, this guy was such a gentleman too. What a great finisher he was. A lot of respect for him. And but that particular one, he had obviously against Arsenal, and that was Dirk Bergkamp. You know what I mean? A big team Arsenal, they had big players, but it was Bergkamp that it gave me a little bit of extra motivation. But I did well 60 minutes, and then I faltered a bit, you know what I mean? I was getting tired, and that was my problem. I couldn't. So we always used to play 4-3-3, where I would track back if needed to, but not as much. But here, I needed to really go make extra meters, extra yards. Now, whenever I wanted to get the ball short, the ball would go long. So I would never be able to support and be there in time. Never wanted to go long, the ball was short. I had to run back. That's the way. So it's finding that balance where I was not wasting energy at that time. So you start reading the game a little bit better. So you save yourself energy for the things that, you know, that you need to do. But before that, you were running so much afterwards that when you finally do get the ball, you're kind of tired to do your thing. But those are the moments where now you need to do your thing. But because you weren't good enough, you lose the ball or sloppy pass, or you go back to play safe. So for me, first year, big learning curve. Playing with the reserves, playing up front as well. Not just on the left, but playing up front, change position a bit. But I needed it, and I've no complaints at all.
So your second season, Town sign two players during the summer in Mark Venus and Matt Holland. Later on in October, they sign David Johnson. And I think by the end of October, you've played 13 appearances, so you know, double what you played in your first season already.
Yeah.
You're involved in a game I'd like to speak to you about, which was the League Cup tie against Manchester United. Alex Mathey and Tirico scored, and you were involved in the build-up for both of those goals. Are you the sort of player that kind of remembers all of your contributions in every game?
Yeah, I do look at it because you want to contribute. You know, you want to play part, especially in the goals, the setup, the assist. But if you're not, you want to just make sure that I've done my job, and I'm very self-critical. And if I look back at some of the footage which I've done in the past, I look and go, should have done this more, should have done that. Because people need to understand that we have this expression that the best view is obviously on the side, right? But unless you're in there, sometimes you think you don't have time. But when you're in the stands, you have a better view. It's like, you do have time. And it's just decision-making and the confidence and fitness that played a big part. But yeah, for me, the signings that the club made were very good signings. That shows you the results. Matt, of course, golden boy, couldn't do anything wrong. Mark Venus, very vocal. Obviously, him and Moga formed a good partnership. Hence, then they are a manager and first team coach to go together. And then obviously, Jono was a breath of fresh air because he was fast, he was strong. Even once his size, he could self put himself about. Yeah, he was mobile, agile, and that gave us another dimension. It's James Scobie as well there, who very good in finishing. I mean, we had a good team. We could play a different type of football, obviously with two strikers up, and it was always kind of like one spins out and one spins in the hole, even with Alex Matthew. Yeah, and I think when you start to see the game a bit better, understand how we like to play as a team and how the opposition play and how those movements work, yeah, we had then speed with Gus. We had Jamie Clapham, good left foot. Manisha Tirico, Kieran, that could run. Oh no, he started on the right hand side, but we all knew that, man, if he could take the ball and he would not be faced if it was in between players, could take them on. And I think that gave us also another dimension and another thing for opposition to kind of worry about is that, hey, right, he could do something too. We have got a lot to worry about as well. So I think I think we had a lot of options on how to play our football. Now you have to bear in mind that I think it was my second season. I think the first part of the second season, I wasn't playing as much, right? But there was an incident, and it was just before, I would say, a Man City. Joe Royal was just new manager. And I came on, we lost half an hour. I set up the goal for Kieran, for the 2-1. But I put in a free kick in, and I think I claim it. I think it was my free kick, was 1-1. Then towards the end, recombination with Mr. Tirico, and I put it in front and hit and pop. And as he lost, boom, 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 goes to the other side. I think that for me was an important moment. I think this is something that you didn't realize. There was an incident between me and Jono, because we used to play obviously midweek, and we used to have a training session in the evening, and then we would travel, and then the next day training session again. So we do training session, Portman Road, and the ball falls. I was playing against Jono, back post. As the ball goes over, I put my foot out to block it. He hits my foot. So Jono was sore, was in pain, so he had to go up. Dos Burley goes absolutely out of his mouth. He goes, Matt, and says, that's terrible. He did it on purpose. With a squeaky voice of his. Yeah, you did it on purpose. And he kept moaning, man. And then I said, listen, if you don't fucking want me, I said, fucking send me home then. Send me fucking home. I had fucking enough. I'm done with it. So then we had a game. We kept back and forth, right? The ball was even close. So he kept nipping in me. And then I was, and Jaron Williams and Mika Stockwell, they kind of see it, right? Because I'm always been quiet. I take it on my chin. And then the ball fell in between me and George. I was like, oh, please go for it, because I'm going to ride through you with your dodgy knee. And then as soon as I went in, he backed off and let it go. Training session was done. I was fuming. Mickey Stockwell, Jerome Williams came over. So Bobby calmed down, relaxed, et cetera. I was, because I hate losing my temper and having to go with the manager. But the next day, didn't speak to each other. We went to the hotel. We didn't speak at dinner. It's just the session in the mornings. Came out of the bus and he pulled me aside. He said, "Oh, Bobby, you know what happened yesterday. You know, it's emotions. You know, it's okay." And that was it. I thought I was there to bollock him, but it wasn't. I was like, it took me this long. And after that, it was fine. You know, and it was really weird. Like, I said, I was apologetic. I said, "Matt Gaffer, I do not like to swear, but you've been on my case the whole time." Then I realized later, they're looking for a response for him because I kept things in and I wanted to see a reaction. So they've seen a bit of an aggression, but I do have it, you know what I mean? But I didn't know how to channel it. So that for me was, the ice was broken basically. And even if he shouted at me, I wasn't really bothered about it anymore. But I always enjoyed it playing further away. First half, you always play away from the dugout. I love that. Because when you're on the side, right, he just goes, Bobby, stay away. I'm like, the ball is on the other side.
It's focused.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He's dropped his headphone and he's come out of the call. So I'm just going to talk for a little bit and hope that he joins us back again. If not, a superb end to the show. And he's back.
What happened there?
You pressed something.
I think my earpiece fell out there and then I had to reset it again. But where were we? What was the...
We can't see you, Bobby. You turned your cameras okay, off, I think. I think, what I would say is we beat Manchester United in that League Cup tie, and then you had a knee injury and you were out for about 8 games. George Burley brought in David White. Jason Dizel came back for a brief spell. Andy Legg came in on loan, I think, to cover you. But in December, you're back. And for me, when I think of Bobby Petter, I think about this run from December through to the rest
all
of
the
season.
And if
you 6th of December, you're recalled after your knee injury, and within 30 minutes, you provide an assist to Jono away at Tranmere. The following game, Jason Cundy nods in your free kick at home to Portsmouth. You end of December away to Swindon. You win a penalty in that game, and then you run the ball 60 yards to score your first goal for
the first one. Yeah, which was a deflection. Was that take any time, to be honest?
They all count.
You have to.
Yeah.
That was crucial, but it's very good that you mentioned that. Yeah, momentum started to happen there. And the players knew what I was capable of doing, but you want to do it during the match stage, and that's where it all counts. And I was glad that goal gave me a bit of a boost. I must admit that, yeah.
Do you remember the League Cup quarterfinal tie home to Chelsea? Ruud Gullit was there.
Oh, man, I should have scored, right? I spoke to Ed Tufuli, right? My old former teammate at Feyenoord there. And he said, "Bobby, I knew that you were going to go across." and I hit that post, right?
Yeah.
Where I could have gone at near post. So many times, because I came on as a, up front, I'm not too much, as far as I remember, when the ball came, I took it on my thigh. I knew exactly what I was doing. On my left thigh, I took it on the spin, right? I was through and I was trying to do sweep, give him the ice, far corner. And as well as like a lot of times after it, I played it back. I was like, up, near post all day long, all day long. But I didn't. But yeah, that was a moment where Ruud Gullit, Viali, Drubbef, you know, Verheid, all these players were there. So it was a big game, but yeah, I should have done better.
Great, great memories.
Yeah.
But the momentum carried on. You know, that was January and February. You've mentioned you came off the bench at Man City. It was Joe Royle's first game. You scored in the 83rd minute, and you're spot on with the little 1-2 that you had with Maurizio, and you play it across to Kieran, who, you know, wins it at the death 2-1. And then 3 days later, we're at home to Norwich. And from what I understand, it wasn't until it was quite close to the game that you found out that you were starting. Is that right? Do you remember the build up to the game?
I can't even remember.
I'll tell you that. Yeah. That's what happened. So you apparently reading some of the press cuttings and stuff, it was very late that apparently you said that you didn't in this game also, that you felt that you didn't actually play very well. But we were 3-0 up at half time with Alex Matthews' hat trick. And you come on and you score 2 in the second half, and everybody would talk about your first goal. What I remember is Jono, for such a small striker, jumps up really high and flicks it onto you on the left, and I leave it to you to play out the rest of the goal, really.
Yeah, because that was, you know, the halfway line, right? Start halfway line, Walker played in front, and I would just I said, I'll just run with it. So I run with it, go inside, and then cut across him, then go back out again and just lash it, man. I mean, I didn't take that many touches. I was just seeing my legs. I looked at it a few times and I go, that's actually a pretty good goal, by the way, because I didn't stop. I just used my speed. Sometimes when you do as a winger, you try to go, okay, he's coming, so you hold back. No, I'm running. I was direct, run, pop pace, cut him from the first one, then pop out. Again, it was Fleming, I think it was, the other one. Cut across, back out, and then play it. It was a good strike, and I couldn't believe it. And it was a big relief. I was obviously happy. You look at my celebration. But if you watch those moments, who was the first one to come to me? It was always Matt Holland.
Yeah.
And if you watch some of the goals, Matt Holland, and I was kind of pushing, not on purpose. I looked like I didn't like to celebrate with Matt, but I did, but it's like, go away. I just want to do my thing a bit, right? But yeah,
you take a little sidestep. You kind of score, and then you do a sidestep away from. And I didn't know who it was.
Yeah, I did. So I took it. So what it is, I think I ran towards, and I caught the first one that was chasing. Pop. And then from left, I went back to my right foot. I took it back to my left. So it was left, right, and then I hit it.
You became a hero then. To score one against Norwich.
Yeah, the second one. I mean, it was my right foot and it went through the legs. And obviously, the goalkeeper was, a wrong footer, and it just couldn't get it. It was a weak hand, I would say. But listen, I'll take it anytime. So, I mean, that was my right foot that I scored. It wasn't really in the corner, but who cares? It was the second one. Hey, I'm taking it. It was really good. It was brilliant. And I think that's because the Canaries, they always had this kind of thing, like say in the upper hand, but they happen to be more successful over those games, right? And then for us to kind of go and beat them the way we did, it was just so much enjoyment there.
The rich vein of form that you were in continued. The following week, you scored the opening goal in a 2-2 draw at Sunderland. And again, another game where you and Kieran both scored. He scored in that game.
Yeah, that was another one. So Sunderland was always a tricky one because they were a good team, man. They were a very good team. Their partnership with now Quinn and Kevin Phillips, they had a good partnership. They had obviously that with the wingers. I remember I always played against Somerby. Oh, I used to know the hell out of me him. Because the ball would be on the other side. He would just nip in my ear the whole time. I was like, why are you doing? And what's annoying is one of those kids on school or whatever, you can't shut up, has to. And I realized, well, he's only doing that to get you out of your game because he can't do it without football. He has to do it with words. So try to get on your skin, don't respond to it. So another lesson learned, right? Because I used to be very fine with it. Now I'm regressive and they take me out of my game. But that game, again, was good ball from Alex Matthew. And that shot actually wasn't really that much of a powerful shot. But I would have, in my mind, who was the player in form, who's what he wanted to be, that was Ronaldo. So I tried to do the Ronaldo kind of celebration with it. But yeah, that was 13. I couldn't believe that. That's why he didn't go. I didn't expect it to go in the way it did. It just did. Sometimes just acts, and you know,
I mean,
hopefully, I hope you hope for the best. But we had a good team, man. We had a good team back then. We, and it was close because obviously playoffs, one of the playoffs, we had to go play against each other. So
I heard in March 1998 that the player in form was Bobby Petter, and Ronaldo was doing Bobby Petter celebrations. I think that's been the case. You carried on that in March. You got two more assists. You hit the post in a game. In April, you scored two first-half goals against Port Vale in the 5-1 win. Yeah. I think you then faced Forest, and you were against Pierre Van Hooijdonk.
Yeah, I didn't play well that game. I remember.
A great player. You know, did it mean any more to you when you were playing against another great Dutch player? Did you think that you had to perform even more, or you know, was that?
Yeah, I think because we both know of each other, and obviously came from Celtic, I think then, and it comes to Norwich and to Nottingham, and Nottingham was obviously a good team as well with good history. And they play against each other. Yeah, you want to do inform. So people always in the build up talk about you. You like that, but you want to perform as well. And in that game, I personally didn't perform the way I was planning to, you know. But you do want to play out of your skin and put in a good performance against a fellow countryman, you know. You do. We wasn't the best of games for us, but we still managed to get through to the players. We finished off because before Christmas, I think we were at the bottom of the table.
Yeah.
And then we had, this is how quickly it can go. But we got momentum, and then all of a sudden we see us climbing up the ladder where we come into the playoff zones and contention for that. And yeah, I think we had the way we played. People were, we have a footballing side, and there was we could attack from different angles. And with John and Scully being a really good partnership together. Me on the left, Kid could be on the right, could be center. Matt Holland makes amazing, good, well-timed runs in. Good with header. I mean, his finishing is really good. If you look at some of the goals, even I remember the free kick that I put against Sheffield United. Was a kind of big in-swinging one, which he headed, which if I think back in my memory, what a great header that was from him. But he's very good in timing his run into the box. Either get at the end of it or the balls that are dropped out. Very, very good.
You touched upon that season that we finished in the playoffs against Charlton. Any memories from those two games?
Well, I know that we beat them before that, and I know that we were in form, but they did their homework.
Yeah,
and I played against what's the defender called? The player plays for Man City. Boldy also, what's his name? But he was aggressive. Komol Zambu was aggressive. Because you see, from the first moments that I had the ball, he was right on top of me and tried to kind of keep his leg in there to feel like Bobby Orion for a game. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna shy away. It's gonna be a physical encounter. So yeah, it was a tough game, and we didn't get the result really that we wanted. Then we go to the valley there, and then yeah, it was a shame that we didn't get there, because I think we were really the team that came in the playoffs with momentum. And but they did their homework. You have to say the opposition did their homework. Purposely did his homework. So yeah, because I knew, because we knew that we could win, we could play, but I also know that we have to where the danger would come from. If we limited that, then we can have a chance. And that Clackman Duncan and stuff like that, and he was a good striker too at the time. You know, we have to be honest there. But we gave it our best, and it was a shame. It was an anti-climax, and really, I remember one of the other coaches was more with Dodge. You can see that disappointment, guys, that you feel right now. Use that. Because the next time that you're in that position, you don't want to feel that way. Do you know what I mean? Gives you hopefully an extra motivation to work a bit harder. And unfortunately, you go Bolton, and then, you know, and then the next season. Yeah, again. And I remember we had a session after not going to the playoffs finals. And I was drained. We had a session, I was drained. You know, it's just, and I said, Andy Kleinman, you're empty. You know, and it's done.
I think you're right. That Charlton away game was probably one of the biggest disappointments for me as a fan on the terraces. It was just like everything that we had done so well is, I think you're right. I think Alan Kirbishley, being a really clever manager, had done a job on us, and we couldn't perform. But for you personally, the season ended, you had 15 assists, you know, you're going into your final season of your final year of your contract and stuff like that. Yeah. Couple of new players come in, Marco Holster, another Dutch player comes in, but he doesn't really make a great impact on the side, and Manu Thetis. But before we talk about a few of the games and a few of the things that happened that season, was it around that time that you got ginger streaks in your hair? You dyed your hair?
I don't know, man. We're going to see a face now. I look at this. It wasn't highlights. It was ginger lights. You know what I mean? Yeah. I call them. So, I mean, I remember I put the ginger lights in, and it was too ginger. I'm like, man, I need to dye this. So I dyed it black. I remember Marco Holster. And there's obviously dye on the side of my forehead, right? And I was scrub it off. It will come off eventually. Marco, probably never realized your hair was that dark. I just, no, it's always been this dark. You know, I didn't want to say that. I freaking just dyed my freaking hair jet black, you know, because I was embarrassed because it didn't work out that well with the ginger lights, as I call it. But yeah, I'm just a bit of, you know, the way you look. And obviously, you remember when I first came, my hair was a bit longer and stuff. And it was just, yeah, a bit sharper, I would say. A bit lighter, but it looks a bit sharper, you know what I mean? Yeah, for me as well, it was just a phase where, like, everybody kind of goes through with a hairstyle, whatnot. So I won't do that again, though. I've not done it since. So,
well, it wasn't a terrible look, I've got to say.
What goes well with the orange strips that we had? I mean, that goes true. Well with that one.
why did you wear the wristband? I always used to think you had some message written under the wristband. You used to play with a wristband, which was kind of...
Yeah, it was like I had a wrist necklace, whatever you call it, a bracelet, right? I had it on my, and I didn't want, weird man, I should just take it off, but I didn't want to take it off. So to protect it, I just had to keep on it. That's basically what it is. Yeah, that was protected, even with my ring, and that's because of my grandfather's ring. I didn't want to take it off. I put a tape over it. That's why I really done. That's not so much an exciting story, but. That was actually the real reason there. I mean,
get all of the scoops on here. So 98-99, Town didn't score a league goal until I think about the sixth match. And when the goals did come, you provided an assist to Jono and to Vino. But then in October, things seemed to start to unravel a little bit. Alex Mathey had departed. Danny Sonner had gone. Jono came out in the press and said that Town lacked a bit of ambition. And then 2 days later, story comes out that Town reveal that they're prepared to listen to offers for you. And apparently you've turned down a 3-year contract. And the club had already also turned down £500,000 bid from Barnsley. Now, was that paper talk? What was going on in the background? Because also what happened, Jonathan Hunt comes in, and I think he was kind of played on in your position as well. When did you realize the writing was on the wall, I guess, for you?
No, well, let's put it this way. My first year when I came, right, wasn't good. Before you go away, in the summer break, I was told that would work. So that if you sound would work, I had a meeting with George Burley. He said, "Well, it hasn't worked out, you know, we planned. And you can go." He said, "You can go. If you can find yourself a team, we are more than willing to help with them." That was before the end of the first season. So the second season, it took a bit of time, and then Man City game, that so it took me a few months after that. But now you know that was being said. They want to get rid of me. I said, "I'm here. I signed the contract. I'm going to stay. I'm going to fight for it," which I did. And then that last season, the Bosman ruling came, right? So he knew that it was really interesting. So they offered me a contract. The contract was double than what I had. Now, if you look at the finances that other players would go for, I'm like, and they said, "Remember, because this is what they do." They put, we offered Bobby a lucrative contract. I'm going, "What lucrative? You wanted to get rid of me, and now you give me double, and it wasn't that much anyways." So I'm thinking, hold on a minute here. Whoa, right? Okay, one. Well, that's a bit of a change. But what I've done is they said, they offered me a lucrative contract, which I deserved. He said, "You deserve." I think, well, I deserve more than that, to be honest. But that's just my, and then people might think that's where the North Stand was saying, "Greedy Bobby Petter, you greedy bastard," right? That's why I didn't play. The reason why I didn't play was the fact that one of four is Bobby, that's going to be, you know, if Bobby doesn't play, the interest will die down. And then hopefully Bobby will sign the contract as one of them. You understand? But then after New Year, it's Bosman ruling. I can sign a deal. And then we didn't play well. That's when he started to play me again. Remember that one? Because I didn't go so well and I wasn't playing. And then he had to start playing me. And that's something bad. That was a change. He needed a bit of extra dynamic in the way we were playing. He pushed me back in the team, which gave us as a team another dimension. And that was lacking. And that's when I know that I did it on purpose. To kind of die off the interest. So I would sign the deal to stay with them. And if they would say it was a lucrative contract, they would get me for it fairly cheap. You know what I mean? That was basically. And people call me greedy. I'm not going to name the numbers, but that wasn't, I want to know what's fair, and that wasn't fair, in my opinion. So I waited. Barnsley, I knew about that one. I know Hearts was also interested and stuff. That was a bit of cool. And then towards the end, was Celtic that came in. It was a bit of a surprise. And I spoke to Moga on the training pitch. And he said, "Moga, I can tell you everything about it because I've lived it, I've experienced it. But it's different than playing in the East England derby when it's 25,000 or whatever people watching you. There it's 60,000 and people that will watch you if they can abroad, you know. And it's not just a club. It's, of course, it's the people you play for. But I can tell you, but yeah, I said, if you decide to go there," because that was just paper talk at the time. I said, "Okay, I'll wait and see. So for me, I was just to focus on the team. But that year, my sister passed away in March. And that was a moment in my life. On the 21st of March, which is the start of spring, my sister passed away. She was 27 at the time. Her birthday would be the 30th. And it was 9 days before her birthday. And that was played a big role in my life, because it came at a point where I went over, happened on a Sunday, and the next following weekend, just to kind of skip to the following weekend, I was already back against Swindon, but I was in the stands. And the players who met my sister, because she came over as well to watch me play, they obviously were also very touched, and they felt bad for what happened. And they didn't realize, they thought, Bob, I didn't think he would come back after that. Otherwise, he would have stayed for longer away, you know what I mean? I was like, I know, but what am I supposed to do? You know, she would be my biggest friend. I mean, you know, would be sad and mourn, but of course, I've got my work to do. I've got to focus on that too. With that in mind, you got to do it because she still watches over me and she's still there, Bob. You got to do it. She wouldn't want you to stay home. What are you going to do? You know, you still mourn being, you know, doing your job and on your moments that you're not, you know, doing it on your own. You can mourn. You need to cry. You can shed a tear and let things out and mourn in that way. But you need to have a focus. I think that's an important thing. I still had a focus, and the focus was my career was football with Ipswich Town. I had to focus on that. And that's the focus. I think for everyone, if something tragic happens, you need to have a focus. You know, I mean, you can't just focus on what's happened and focus right. Can't change that. I have to deal with it. I have to live through that from day by day. But I have a focus. If I had nothing, it would be freaking terrible. We were hard for people. They don't have anything else to focus on because you fall in that black hole and you can't get yourself out. But this was something that I could put my focus on, my energy in. And then that's what I did. And then I helped the team to get into the next playoff. And we did it, unfortunately. You know, it was a great game, to be honest, against Bolton on the second leg. But this is me, man. Be stupid for me. I thought, well, we scored so many. They scored this, so we might through. No, they are through a goal because on away goals, you know. And I was like, again, after that, I was flat. It's like, so disappointing. But because, again, call it tough at the time. He also done his homework. You know what I mean? We're close. And then, obviously, when I was gone, Keenan was gone. The next season, so good. You go to the playoffs, Martin Rose, a very good player, great record goal in the final. He goes and he got, I was so pleased. And what Ipswich done in that year, phenomenal. Playing in Europe, playing his Inter Milan, Ronaldo, seeing the footage and stuff. So, yeah, how things. So, I would say that when things changed, there was a few players leaving, people thought, well, what's going to happen? Who's going to come in? And are they going to do the same thing? And I went over and passed because they probably expected us to go push all the way through and be in a contention to go and promote. But it was not until the following season, which was fantastic, you know, to see. Because the Portland Road, it has a good atmosphere when it's full. That's really good.
It's you know, quite a sad end to your career, really, particularly when you think about the season that you had before, you know, with the 15 assists and you were in a rich vein of form. And you know, a lot of us as fans, we just get fed different things that the club want to send out with the press. And I remember when you scored at home to Birmingham.
It's Huddersfield and Birmingham and Huddersfield. The Huddersfield, I came on. And a ball in back post, I got it on my chest, took it with my left foot, and then I hit it with my right, which was kind of like went down on it. And then I went to the North Stand, and I went, this, what did you say again? This is the thing. I mean, know what the fans are like, and then also know what the press is like, because they push stuff in, and obviously they jump to a conclusion. And it's not really nice when all of a sudden, I know how things work, but when you do a warm-up, being called, you greedy bastard, greedy bastard, and I'm like, yeah, you have to deal with that too, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why I was a bit of, because, yeah, you can't really talk about it as such. But yeah, this is something that happens a lot in business,
Sorry, Bob, did the club, what support did the club give you? Because, you know, if you look towards the end, I think Jim Magill, and well, Fabian.
Yeah, brilliant player, fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Fabian and Jim joined. You only started 5 games after that. You played a lot of games in the reserves, and you got a chance. KD breaks his leg, and you come back for a couple of games, but then you're mainly in the reserves, and you come back. You know, your last game was that second leg versus Bolton. You've obviously, you know, the situation with your sister as well. I mean, that was a really difficult time. What support did the club give you during that time?
I mean, everybody was, you know, very, you know, supportive of me as far as I remember. But yeah, I have to think back to now, 99, how it was just came to an end, and that was kind of it. And then it was the end of my contract. And then all of a sudden, you know, I got a call. I was just back in Holland, as far as I remember. And then, I got a phone call. I was walking in Rotterdam, got a phone call from Kelly Douglas. They wanted me. That was the only moment that I realized it was concrete. It was, you know, it was all paper talk. Everything was paper talk. I went with the flow, and so the club was supportive. But after that, after the Bolton game, I just, you know, just left, and then that phone call came.
And like you say, for Ipswich Town and for Bobby Petter, you know, both went on to better things. You know, you signed for Celtic. I think, you know, you won two Premier League titles there. So this is an Ipswich Town podcast, but I'm going to extend it a little bit into your career, because I just want to ask you about two players that you played with, and one of them obviously managed Ipswich in Paul Lambert. What was he like as a player?
Paul is such a good pro. Obviously a Champions League winner with Dortmund, captain, a leader on the park. Knows what he's capable of doing, knows his ability. He's not a one that takes people on. He's not a sprinter with it. You know what I mean? He reads the game well, puts a tackle in, gets the ball and shifts it. Knows his role very well. That's Paul. And if you look at those kind of players who are leaders, they're also captain at the time, they always become managers. Like Neil Lennon, sitting midfield player, becomes a manager. If you look at Mark Venus at Mobi, they defenders. So everything that, if it's a sitting midfield player, you see everything in front, or as a defender, you have a picture of it. And those kind of players are, depending on their personality, they'll become managers. And that's when Paul was a leader. So like me, he's a Leo, he's a proud person too, but he's a winner. He's a winner. But, you know, if you are a player, but then become a manager, it's a totally different story. You know what I mean? Because there's, just because you're a great player doesn't mean you're going to be really, really successful coach. That's another thing. That's you become a player and then you become a coach. You're the other end of everything. You know, now you've got to make the decisions. Now you've got to deal with agents, with the board, with other things. And that's for me, man. You know what I mean? I like to work with the players. I'm more of a people's person. I'll be more of a coach, and that's where I see myself. That's why I enjoy what I'm doing, where I'm looking at the technical side of it, and I watch it, and I always strive. I want more, you know what I mean? I always want more. Now, I want to jump back a bit. The relationship between me and George was all right. When we had our fallouts and stuff, but it was not, it was Moga, but also it was Brian Hamilton. And it was, what's his name? It was the right-hand man of he came over, well, we had, okay, from Spurs.
John Gorman,
yeah, and the other one.
Stuart Houston.
Now, Stuart, I told you Stuart, Stuart, right? He was assistant. And George, we were in a training ground. And George starts showing this exercise that he wants to do. So he goes, and you have the ball here, and then you dribble, and then you accelerate with the ball like this. And he didn't accelerate. He thinks he's accelerating. So I was standing next to Stuart Houston and go, he said, supposed to accelerate. But it looks like that's not acceleration. And Stuart Houston starts laughing, right? Because he put on the show, but that's what in the cheeky. I'm like, so much for acceleration here. Supposed to accelerate. And it's just the way I said it, and he started laughing. He was a good man too. Okay, but they were so important for me, especially Brian Hamilton as well. Brian always says, we'll run all over him. because I like encouragement. So even when we put pressure on people, like, right, go, go, let's go, put pressure, run all over, pop, pop, get the ball, go, go. And I really responded to that. And Brian knew that. And then he knew that I was fast and I was nifty, and I could figure it out and I could nick the ball off. And I think there was a game, I mean, against like the Wolves, I play, I think it was a very good game as well against Wolves at home. I played a good game. I should have maybe scored, and the goalkeeper, the Dutch goalkeeper, Zegers, I think it was, for testing, but he was like, ooh, he looked at that. But yeah, there's a few games where it wasn't, because the manager was there, but the assistants managers changed. But they had a very good influence on me, different than George. And they were a bit more, I would say, explain to me what it is that he wanted and he was looking for, and what I had to focus on, really. You know what it's like, just focus on this, but everything will work. So, you know what I mean? They're very good in doing that, because they probably realized that the way maybe George at the time was explaining wouldn't maybe be as clear as it maybe would for other players. So having seen Bobby from the side, I'm like, well, I think this is the best approach to make George's point clear to Bob. That's basically what happened. And they were very instrumental in doing warming up with the characters. They're all good characters. Yeah. And I think a lot of them, it was also Brian Clough as well and Sarge. And they played a really important role, because they have been there with the reserves as well. They were, and I look back at it, man, we had some really good times. And obviously, sometimes you have to travel, of course, but you need to. If you don't play, you got to play with the reserves. But we were very good in coaching and respecting you as well. And that gives, I respect them. I don't go against managers as such, but I listen. And they seem to understand what, for me to focus on what I need to do and how they get the best out of me. They know how to do that and how to speak to me. I think nowadays, especially now, it's important. Management skills is important.
100%. And I think, you know, looking back at the time that you were at with Ipswich, a lot of Ipswich fans will remember some great memories, some great goals that you scored, and thank you for, you know, paintings, you know, what was happening in the background as well, to give us a better understanding of what happened, which was, you know, almost 25 years ago, and bringing it up to the modern day. What do you think of Kieran McKenna's Blues, and are we going to see you at Portman Road at some point?
You know, obviously there's an invite to come to that's next month, to the former players. I think it's dinner and golf, all that stuff. I need to respond, but I don't think I'm gonna make it, because some other things going on. But I like the things that are gonna be, talk about playoffs, right? If they're not become, they're directly gonna promote, there'll be the playoffs. And I would like to go and go watch, because Simon Milton is another one, what a fantastic character he is. If she's close to my heart, I know I post a lot about Celtic and stuff, but in my heart, I never forget how important Ipswich has been and the people there. And I want to go come back down south and take a few days at least to go and have a look and meet with the people who are still there, see what's changed. I spoke to Kieran, just to see how training ground, how things have changed, because a lot of things have changed with sports science and maybe training complex and stuff. And obviously in my time, they were just talking about it, because everything needs to be upgraded and stuff. So that took a bit of time. But what the manager is doing, so no, what's up, apart from the log and what the goalkeeper was doing in the last game, I think it was Blackburn, wasn't it? I was like, oh my God. Right? And it's not once, it's twice, you know what I mean? So I'm sure that it wouldn't be making those mistakes anytime soon. But yeah, unfortunately, that's one of the things where it looks really silly. But I've seen some of these goals, how they play from the back or on the pressure, move it across. That's football. That's really nice to see. And where the manager comes from, where he's been Man United, does his homework. He's a young manager, and it's from when he came to where it is now, what people have responded to that. And you have one of these games, unfortunately, against Blackburn, but he knows how to deal with it. And obviously, the goalkeeper didn't do that on purpose, you know what I mean? Few too many, but he will learn from that performance, and I'm sure that he will not try to repeat it again. So, as a team, I think it's very encouraging. So good to see some really good football, one touch, two touch, bomb over, running, third man running. It's brilliant to watch, and that is, that's what the fans deserve as well. Because Ipswich Town is a footballing town. It's a football team, plays football, and they can see that they play some really good football. And let's hope they're able to last and if not promote directly, which I hope, because it's a long season. The people seem to understand, it's 46 games, 46 games. And they've got obviously League Cups and FA Cup, unfortunately, they got obviously a lot. The other one, but look, the league is the most important thing. And you want to get back to where the team, if you look at Luton now, they can do that too. Do you know what I mean? And then they can go all the way. There's going to be challenges left, right, and center. But that what makes a team even better, where the chips are kind of down or your momentum goes down a bit. How can you pick yourself up to go back out there? It's part of development, it's part of life. You have to pick yourself up. And it's a good group. You've got a good manager there who seems to have a good group of players there. And knows how to kind of have a good positive impact on players, especially now as a seven-man management. I think he knows and understands that the old school times aren't there anymore where this is my way or highway, go. Do you know what I mean? But now you have to really say, right, okay, I'm gonna address this person, treat this person a bit firmer, because that's what they need. And this one maybe a bit of a softer approach. Because maybe be a little bit sensitive, but the point of everything is as a manager, how do I get the best out of the players? Because I know everybody's got different personality, but in order for me to get everyone, because they all can contribute, and sometimes it is a confidence. And at the end of the day, if you can get some confidence, momentum going. Once you get momentum, you work hard and do some extra work in training or behind closed doors. You look at footage, anything nowadays. To make the players understand, we're here to help, right? We're here to help, not just for yourself as a player to develop, to understand the game more, but also your teammates and the club where you want to be at. Because this will help for later on, wherever you're going to go after your career. I've learned from every manager. I learn a lot. What to do, what not to do. You know what I mean? And I first look at myself and go, man, shouldn't have responded like this. First thing I do is I look at myself. Have I got a part to play and I should have done better maybe? But that's also part of process. You never are the same person as I was when I was going at 21, 22. You've grown. You know how to reflect. And you know how now I understand what that manager meant. You know? And being a manager is not easy. It's 24/7. It's a really pressure job and you have to rely on the good coaching staff to do that bit as well. There's a lot of other people that make a club successful. And obviously, when it's successful, the manager gets the praise, but he knows this is the team that is there to help me. But also the main responsibility falls with him, but he's doing a very, very good job. And I really love to come back to Portman Road and support the team and absorb everything. Because there will be a lot of memories, even when I would travel down, just to travel itself and brings back memories from back in the days. And how things have progressed since. There's a few Dutch players that have been after me, or I mean, Fabian, Marco Holster, Martin Reuze. There's a few players from Scotland that came down. It's just really nice where, they all played a part of the team. And I played in 25 years ago, which seems like a long time. But I'm really proud and very, very happy, grateful that I've been able to, that I've actually, I'm part of the Ipswich Town history, you know, I mean, I'm really, really happy.
Yeah, and brilliant. And thank you so much for your time here to talking about Ipswich, and you've still got your passion, which is fantastic. There's, as well as Ipswich, another thing that I like is zombie films. So I'm just going to end with how did you become an extra in World War Z?
Oh man, I was just walking down the street, man. I was just walking down the street in Queen Street in the city, and I was just at this place, Asian restaurant. I came out, and some of the directors of the casting, and they were handing out leaflets, right? And then I got stopped by this particular one, and she says, "Well, you'll be good in this movie." That I said, oh, "Okay, all right, okay, whatever." So I took the leaflet. I didn't really pay much attention to it. It was the following week. I got asked by someone who had a jewelry shop to kind of maybe help her with promoting her business. This was in Argyle, in Argyle Gate, whereas where the shops, watch shops and diamonds and rings are stuff. So then I helped. But next door to her is a casting agency, and that casting agency, there are two people there who recognized who I was, but they were just about to pick stuff up because there was casting happening in the university, Caledonia Thursday. So they said, Bobby, you should come. Now, this particular woman who I was working with or helping out, she said, Bobby, I've got some Celtic cupcakes. These people from the casting agency, so Bobby, Marie, who runs this casting agency, she's a mad Celtic supporter. So I'm like, so I'm walking up with the cupcake, with the two people, up to the university. It's quite busy. There's a big queue outside. I just skip the queue, come to the front, right, Bobby. Give Marie, I give her the cupcake. She's ecstatic, right? She's happy, bless her. And I just get told, so I fill this one in, and once you're done, I go to number four, where that woman is. I go look at that woman, go, oh, that's that woman who gave me the flyer. So as soon as I woke up, she recognized me, took some pictures, and I got casted in there. That in itself was big for Glasgow, because city center was stopped, and you go into the, you have this base where everybody goes in, and I was there from day one, basically. And you get asked to go in certain scenes. So I don't know if you know, obviously, the intro, that was all part in Glasgow. It's supposed to be Philadelphia, but it's in Glasgow. And the first day of filming there, people spotted me, right, up in the flat. And they go, Boy Petta. And they go, fuck Brad Pitt. It's all Boy Petta. And they posted it, and they shouted my name. So I went like this, hi. And all of a sudden, I looked to my right, and there was the filming crew there, right? I'm like, and they kept shouting, Bobby said, Tone it down a bit. So that was posted on, and I got a lot of responses to it, where Real Radio there wanted to have a chat with me. But the next day, big piece in the Scottish paper, it says, "Their boy Brad Pitt is Bobby Petta." I'm like, he must be thinking, who the hell is this guy? Yes, we have two initials, in common, BP, but that's as far as I go. Who's this guy? But then when you do the filming, you're very close, so that's isn't where he crashes the car. And then it goes out. That's the moment I'm sitting in the taxi. And it's just fascinating how things are filmed from different angles, where basically he's sitting in a car in front and I'm there and I'm waiting in the queue, and then the director is there, and then it's a different angle. So kind of goes, and there's people running about, right? Chaos. It was a really good experience to be a part in, and it lasted for a week, 2 weeks. You get to know, and I was basically hanging around. And I got asked to help out with different parts of it. And then start speaking to the Tongman. And there was this guy called Wade. Wade is South African. He just stunts. And I started talking to him and said, I was interested how to do that, right? How to get into the whole film business. I was just intrigued. I was interested. And he started speaking to some of these other stuntmen, and he's speaking now in the movies. Mission Impossible and James Bond, in the Guy Ritchie movies. I'm like, oh, remember, I'm speaking to him. I was like, and someone has a role in the Baldy guy in the Fast and the Furious when The Rock was in there, and it was all filmed also in Glasgow. I'm like, I remember speaking to him too. And it's once you get into that circle kind of thing, like I think with anything else, then you maybe have a chance. You look at now the British gangster movies. They all look at the same kind of casting, you know what I mean? Yeah, that even the security, that's I think a few companies, even from down south, that would come up and do some of the private security. And it would strike up because they like football too. So they start talking about it. And they realized, oh, Bobby, you at least play football. I said, aye, but yeah, I just talk to anybody. So it was quite easy. And then, yeah, there were other films. You see them, I hang over, I was in town and hang out the window. So, oh, what's happening there? He goes, oh, Bobby, what are you doing? He said, I'm good. Listen, I'll come downstairs. So what's happening? It's just really, really nice to kind of see things, how things are done at a film and a major film like this, and what's involved behind that. It's interesting. And yeah, there's more to life than football. Eh? And you watch films, and it's like you get exposure, or you get that. Since then, I asked to do something with CBBC, Children's Program, because the person there is a Celtic fan. Then I did something with Lynx. Men Don't Cry, that was another thing because the director was a Celtic fan. And they contacted me. It's just nice few things to kind of be asked. I don't go out to ask. I get asked and contacted, but it's just a really nice thing. And that was just off the cuff. I remember in Holland, they posted it and a big thing in the paper. Well, and one thing I could say, well, I was running away from zombies, which is basically what happens here too. And I run away from the zombies there, you know what I mean? You know what it's like. That was a good experience.
You've got the right
man.
Skills. You can outpace them. And certainly the zombies in World War Z are not the ones that are sort of slow in The Walking Dead. You know, they were quick. So
No. I tell you what, man, there were some things. And, you know, this is the thing, because you have groups, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, and they all go to different areas. They see people from a different group. They start leaving that group. They start hovering where the action is, where the actors are, where the cameras are. And there's a lot of breaks and stuff like that. And the only thing I remember is like, reset and walk back. Right, set, action. And then you go back again. It's just, but you look back and see, it's just so interesting to see and the amount of people that are involved. Not just the makeup, but the props, cameras, expensive material, even the accident where how it's filmed. It's like it's on a chain. It's well, it has to be a calculator. Pop, this is the impact. This is the length of the chain. If not, everything goes AWOL. You know, it was amazing to watch. A bit like anything else. It's not just recording this and that. It's like with football. There's a lot more that comes to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not just skill. There's a reason why we move this way, that way, or no go forward, or whatever. There's a lot of things, I would say, in football that happens at the spur of the moment. It changes everything because you wanted this, but you touched them. So you have to go for another solution, other option. There's always options, right? You're just picking the right one sometimes. And that's, you know, everything changes. You just have to go with it. And that's actually the beauty with everything. Ups and downs. Good times, bad times. But the only thing I have, I would say, is my experience as a football player, my career with various clubs, with Ipswich, Celtic, or not. This thing with the film industry, it just is an experience and exposure to industry that, yeah, that is just really nice to have seen it, but yeah, a small part in it. But the connection with people, I would say, like we are talking about it, you as a fan, right, and he's getting to the podcast, just openly talking about my time at the club. And I mean, there's plenty of other things that I can say about my time and issues in this case. But they will be jumping from one thing to another, you know what I mean? But
well, we can always save that for another time, Bobby. It doesn't look like Kieran is going to join us. I think he was on the road up to Chesterfield. When Kieran and I spoke, we like to interview players that have got great stories, and you certainly haven't let us down today. Been brilliant to hear about everything that you did at Ipswich, what you're doing now. Obviously, the film stuff with World War Z is always a question that I've always kind of wanted to ask you. So
It was filmed in 2011, and there was a delay, and it didn't get out until 2013. So whenever you see a film that's being released then, you know, it's been filmed a year and a half before that, you know. Yeah. But the process of editing and the software, it takes a long time. But it was, good, as I said, good memories, good players. And thank God for social media, where you have various platforms where you can get back in touch with some of the players. And I think that's a beautiful thing. At the end of the day, what we have is memories. And, you know, you've seen me play. And now we're talking, and I'll give you a bit of insight how things were. But I think that's a beautiful thing, where from a fan's point of view, doing the podcast and a former player, then I'm just being myself. And there's a lot of things that have happened. There are a lot of good things which has shaped me as well as a person. And what I've noticed after finishing my career is I go back to my childhood. I go back to what makes me happy, and that is sports, and that is helping people, learning from other people. So I'm definitely not one of those people that, because I've done it, I know it all. Man, there's some great footage of people nowadays doing coaching drills. I'm like, that's a good one. And I might have played at a high level, but I'm looking at it, I'm like, that's a good exercise. I'll pick that up. You know what I mean? So you can always learn from people who have been there, or people who are just good coaches and come with some, and you're like, oh, because I remember with George, he had a few exercise where he has a square. He had people at every corner. He had two people in the middle. And he had two balls diagonally on the outside. Now, you played one into one player. Now, forget about that ball. Now you have to look at the other ball that goes out, and then you have to run off it. I mean, I was at the front. I go, somebody else goes first now, because I do not get the idea of this drill until I got it. But yeah, there are some drills out there where I'm like, I was scratching my head. Another person I've got a burning, Tony Vaughan. What a player. What a guy he was. Now, Vaughan, he had a bit of an altercation with George. They had me go on the training ground. And we did, and George likes to kind of come in and show what he's got, right? Then he can do, he does ping a ball, he can't cross a ball, right? We did a regain, and yeah, that morning, I'm gonna go at Vaughan. This was because it was a Monday or something after the game, and it was giving him shit about what he'd done in the weekend. So Vaughan, the way he is, he just goes, starts talking back. And I kept going back and forth until George stops it. So George stops it, addresses everybody, and addresses Vaughan. Vaughan goes, fuck off. They go, that's 20 pages. Shut up. Shut up. That's 20 pages. That's 3 weeks' pages, 4 weeks' pages. And I just go like, and obviously the rule is you can't give anybody a fine more than 2 weeks, right? But I just look at them, shut up, you. Oh, no, it's going to be another week. Oh, no, it's going to be another week. I was just interesting about how he went on. And then Vaughan responded, oh, shut up. What are the stories? 3 weeks, right? Oh, it was brilliant.
Brilliant player.
Yeah, I think we had really good players. And if I look back, because they also started at academies, other clubs. And I think that's... once you've moved, right? So Swellity is good friends with Stoney from Newcastle, also played for Nottingham. So because you played with these players and then you play for other teams and you maybe meet them or they know somebody, you know somebody, it's really nice. But that gives you, establish a certain bond with, because they probably got to ask. So you played with him. So what is he like? You know, because that's what you do. Because as a player, you come in, you want to make sure that the player does come in. You might perceive him as a certain individual, but you still want the kind of second opinion. What is he like? Is he arrogant? Is he a good teammate? Is he you know, is he stuck up? Is he just really nice? Does he work hard? It's a little bit of feedback, and I think that's where you establish a bond with the colleagues, a place you played against, played with. And that's, I think, the beauty of everything. Because wherever you go, and even when I went to Bradford, there's Lee Crooks, who was at Man City, and I played with him. He was also in the team where, you know, I scored and I created that chance. We went 2-1. I mean, my first game in the English league was Main Road. That what we had the cream and black shirt, and that's what I will never forget. That and that George Pincrossi, what a player he was, and Beasley as well, right? That Beasley was there in the team. But you go in and you look at that big stand, and that's my debut. And if I look back at it, that was some amazing times. And I will never forget it. I'm thinking back now, man, I could talk long about it.
25 years, and you've still got a fantastic memory. 88 appearances.
Oh, that's right.
9 goals.
Yeah, that's right.
Over 20 assists. I mean, I think, you know, you have to be, you know, really proud of that. I'm really proud and pleased that you took the opportunity to come on here, Bobby. It means a lot to talk to me, and I know that the fans will be pleased to hear about what you got up to, and the inside story of what happened at Portman Road. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Because when I went to, I went to play for Fulham, right? So they wanted to test him. So, but the reserves, we played against Ipswich, which was the first time back, 2004, back at Ipswich. And the reserve came, and I got a good welcome from the fans. And I remember there was a wee fan, and he's in a wheelchair, and he's disabled. And I think I've got him on my TikTok.
Tom.
But he would go, yes, he would go anywhere. We would play in Arsenal at the old Arsenal public ground, right? Hybrid, and he would be there. Yeah, I will never forget. I actually probably will send him a message on TikTok, but I'm not forgotten about the presence of him and the fans. They welcome me. It was really nice, and I did not expect that. Because again, how I left, I wasn't too sure how I would be welcomed if I was going to come back, and that was really good. So it was a really, really good experience to come back at Portman Road, and now the only time is to come back and take a few more days to go and see how things work at the club, and get in touch with Kieran, hopefully can tie up and make it a week. Let's make it a week of it. You know, I mean, that'd be nice because it means a lot to me. Because 25 years since I left, and I've never, apart from 2004, I've not been back there. And I think a lot of things have changed, but people might still be there. And
I'm sure there'll be.
It brings back memories.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of fans queuing up to buy you a glass of red wine because you scored against Norwich. You know, people won't forget that, Bobby. Thank you very much for your time, and look forward to seeing you back in Portman Road soon.
Is Hollywood still there, the club?
Sadly, no, it's not. No. Everything closed when Danny left.
I know. That was just Chicago. You want to get into those clubs. But I remember it was Pele Boogie, DJ. He was there, and I was like, he's now in Dubai. I mean, obviously with the DJ, maybe he's wanted to get me over there. But again, you know, connections and it's just really good. So I'm really glad that I'm speaking to you. Thanks for Kieran as well to contact me. And I'll keep you up to date as well if I make my way down south. And hopefully we can tie up and maybe we can do it in your studio or whatever. You know what I mean? It'd be nice.
Be fantastic. No, thank you very much for your time. Take care, Bobby.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.